In order to gain silence, I have a treat for you. That's better. The treat is to go and get one of these sticks from the coffee place. You could probably break it in half and give half to your friends, then to a friend. And then Lucy tells me that providing it's clean, you can come in here and do this.
Taste now, real honey.
Wasn't that worth being silent for? Oh. Absolutely wonderful.
It's like tasting flowers.
It really is.
Is somebody sitting in that chair?
No, you are. Yeah. In fact, I love honeys of different sorts, and we usually have five or six on the table. This one has a really subtle undertaste. It's got a most wonderful finish. Finishes of flowers and African sun. It's got a taste of the wild bush. It is, in fact, perfect. So don't miss your opportunity. Okay, well, we've had two absolutely splendid talks. And this is an opportunity for Satish to ask questions and for Lucy to ask Satish some questions.
So we're asking each other questions?
Yeah, absolutely.
I see. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. In other words, what was it about Satish's talk that set you alive?
Wow. I found that incredibly inspiring. I'm just so touched by this concept of yours to travel without any material funds and to rely on the goodwill of humans. And I think I just feel that so much could be resolved on our planet if we all behaved more like that. And I loved your comment that actually the horrendous conflicts that we read about every day is probably only, you know, a few million people, and the rest of the planet is actually trying very hard to live in harmony. And I have the same, people always say, oh, how do you live in Nairobi? It's such a dangerous, awful place. And I'm like, actually, it's a fantastic place. There are 5% of the people want to kill you, but 95% of the people are fantastic, wonderful, really super people. Yeah. And I get fed that happiness every day by living in a beautiful country. And it's so awful that the news is so negative about our country and so sort of demoralizing. And our tourism industry has collapsed in the last 2 years because of the negative news. And day to day, we don't see that. We have this wonderful, wonderful culture and actually very tolerant culture, I find, in Kenya. We have actually not much conflict between Muslims and Christians and Hindus. We actually have quite a harmonious culture. And I just wish more people would think like you do and be much more, it's not about what religion you are. Your religion creates a part of you, but it's not who you are. You are a person, first of all. And I found that really, really inspiring. And I was just wondering how we can convert that tolerance into the natural world and be more tolerant of other species. So it's not just about tolerance between humans, but this awful ability we have to extract things from the natural world without without an appreciation for the consciousness of those animals, like animal testing on chimps and, you know, just elephant back riding and all these awful things that we just sort of exploit animals because we don't see them as equal to us. And I just wondered what you thought about how do we transfer that tolerance you have with other people into the different level of across species.
Yeah. Thank you for your very kind words about my talk. I could also reciprocate my appreciation for your lovely talk. And the work you are doing is a pilgrimage itself. The reason that we exploit natural world and animal world, part of the reason, is that somehow we have come to believe that human species are superior to other species. This is a kind of nationalism, racism. It's a kind of speciesism. Somebody has called it speciesism. And that speciesism means that entire natural world, 8-point-something million species around the globe, are there for humans to use. This is a kind of philosophy or science or kind of value that we have cultivated over this anthropocentric worldview. So if we want to celebrate the kind of work you are doing, we're respecting elephants and bees and humans and natural world. We have to change our worldview of this human superiority and say we are part of the web of life. We depend on all other species, and therefore our work is to respect all other species. That's a kind of non-violence to all species. And receive their gifts. So trees will give us fruit, and milk, cows will give us milk, and we take it, but take it with gratitude rather than of right. So rather than just think of human rights, we have to also think of rights of nature. Rights of animals, rights of rivers, rights of mountains, rights of forests, rights of all species. And we are part of it. So I celebrate human species. I celebrate human qualities and human world. But I don't consider human world as superior to any other world. So this kind of new understanding, if we can create, then we can make some steps towards the kind of vision and the ideal that you are talking about.
But Satish, how are you going to cope with the fact that we're such an overpopulated world? I mean, we see settlements spreading into all the game parks in Kenya so on.
Yeah. The way we have to do two things. We have to create a new understanding and new education and new awareness that we need to reduce our population. This idea that we have to, first of all, we have to create life longer and longer and longer, make everybody live longer and longer and longer. I was talking with David about it this morning. We have to say that natural life should not be prolonged unnecessarily and unnaturally. And also producing more and more and more children, I think we have to create a new understanding. That's one thing. The other thing is that even if we have smaller population, but if our consumption does not reduce, what I call, if we don't live on an elegantly simple life, elegant simplicity, then even small population can create a havoc. If everybody has a jet aeroplane, everybody has three houses, everybody has two cars, everybody has so much consumption, then even 5 billion or 3 billion people will be too many. So we need to address this question of population, Peter, on two levels. One, reduce the numbers through education, through awareness, and we need to highlight it more. At the moment, we are not highlighting the question of population as much as we need to and we should. But on the other hand, also we need to highlight the patterns of consumption, and we need to live a kind of simple, elegant, satisfactory, beautiful life was just for everybody. Everybody can share. Mahatma Gandhi used to say, there is enough in the world for everybody's need, but not enough for anybody's greed. So at the moment, we are promoting greed through advertising and through many, many other ways. And this economic growth idea, that always we have to grow, 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 I think we have to challenge. Growth, how long? This creates so much anxiety. I was just in Japan, which is third or fourth economy in the world. Still they're saying, not enough, we need more growth. How much do you want? When enough is enough? So we need to address this question. It's not going to be solved tomorrow. The population problem has risen over a number of decades. So it will take decades to solve this problem. But we have to start now. And we have to create a new awareness in the world about the numbers of people and their consumption.
That's absolutely excellent. But there are some of us here, sitting quite close to you, who are rather keen for life extension.
But I wouldn't mind life extension without this body. Body extension is different from life extension. Life, you can have life even after death. Life does not end with body. body's end. So is that what you mean, or life extension in this body?
I was actually just thinking about life extension in this body, but you've raised a fundamental question, and that is, what philosophies do we have to use which in fact suggest that the body is not everything? Because if you go by our science, then it's only the mechanical outer workings are everything. So we need a fundamental shift in our understanding of what it is to be human.
I agree. I think if you go to Hindu philosophy of non-dualism, then we in Hindu philosophy say, Shivoham, Shivoham, Shivoham. It's a kind of mantra we do. So I'm not just this flesh body. I'm not my name. I'm not my position. I'm not these ego things. I'm the self. Self. English has a very beautiful way. I love it. Self is spelt in two ways. Small, lowercase s, and uppercase, capital S. So lowercase s, self, is a bit more egocentric, I. But the capital S, self, is more universal. So that is the life beyond body, with the bigger capital S. So if we can embrace that new philosophy of capital S, and say small s and capital s also again should live in harmony, then we don't have to get stuck with this body and the science which is only materialistic, which says nothing else exists other than what you can measure and you can quantify and you can prove. I think life is beyond measure and beyond proof and beyond a kind of quantification. Life is a quality. It's not a quantity. So I think we need that new understanding, and the work of Medical and Scientific Network is a wonderful platform to create that new philosophy, because you have been working for 30, 40 years on that level. So I think the work you are doing, it needs to be expanded, and it needs to reach more people, more younger people, bigger audience, and at lunchtime we are going to talk about it, how we do it. But I think we need a new paradigm.
I was actually just thinking as you were talking, this is the spiritual discussions that I'm having is something I'm not very familiar with. It's not a field that I regularly come across, very much more sort of in the bush. And I was thinking that human population issues that I'm confronted with, Africa is expanding rapidly, millions. In Kenya, in 1970, we had 9 million people. We now have 40 million people. So it's exponential growth. And we're always complaining about this and farmers getting encroaching upon land. But actually, those individuals have a tiny footprint on the planet compared to you and I, compared to people living in London or New York. So we're dealing with a population that's expanded, but actually has not a huge impact globally on our climate change issues and things like that. And what I'm seeing now is the rapid development in the first world, developed world. There's a turnaround, and they're all sort of going back to organic farming, back to that whole concept of going back to nature, restoring hedgerows, reducing that pesticide spread. And it's almost they're coming back to where our African farmers never left. Our African farmers had no development, and their farming techniques are basically what we're almost trying to get back to here. So it's quite interesting to see that sort of evolution, and I just hope that if every single African farmer expanded to the amount of growth and productivity that we saw in Europe, our planet would collapse overnight from all the chemical
African
impact.
Farmers are already ahead. They are already organic and small scale and more labor intensive, which is whereas our farms have become factory farms and very very capital intensive. And very inorganic, large scale. Yeah. But as you say, a new movement is growing, organic farm, lots of organic gardens, and living back to land, back to nature, respect for nature. It's growing. So Africa is already there. We have to catch up with Africa rather than Africa trying to catch up with us.
In a way, and the way these people live in, a lot of them are in mud huts, and we all look at them and go, poor them, total poverty, desperate lives. Actually, the quality of life, they don't have as many cancers as we do. Their actual quality of life, their time to sit and talk with each other, their time with the children, there's a sort of a different harmony in their daily lives that we don't recognize as being rich. Well, actually, their existence and their day-to-day existence is very, very rich. And their
when I saw the photographs of some of the children in your films, they are so happy-looking, laughing, and running around, and so on. So inspiring.
Yes, it is. I think you know it's not a utopian situation at all. You know, they're all riddled with worms and all sorts of things as well. But there is that balance that they have with nature that I think we've lost some of that in the UK.
Yeah, I think we need to bring the dignity to farm and growing food in Europe and America. Dignity to farmers is very little. If you are not able to do anything else in cities or professional works or something, employment in banks or big business, then you do farming. Farming is for sort of backward, or you have industrial farming, very business, agribusiness. So we need to, I mean, if you are working in a bank, you might get £1,000 a day. If you are working on a farm, maybe £100 a day. Why? Why food production and farming should be considered so low and banking so high? I think it should be the other way around. I think farmers should be paid £1,000 and a banker maybe £100, because bank money is only a means to an end, where the food is without which we cannot survive. So I think in Africa, particularly what I have experienced, is still tremendous respect for farmers. And all this changing, because now people are trying to live in cities and so on. But generally, traditionally, in Africa and also in India, farmers have great dignity. Huge. But in Europe, it's lost.
Yes, I agree, absolutely.
Well, we've almost come to the end of the morning session. What I would like you all to do is to thank both Lucy and Satish for their fantastic talks. Satish.
Thank you, Lucy.
And Lucy.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.